Welcome to March. Very excited about March. You guys should have gotten the March email. Well, you got the March email March 1st, but you should have gotten this week's email this morning. Did you guys get it? Yes. Came through good. Okay, good. And I'm really excited to have our homeopath Noel that you're going to meet next week and, the rest of the month. He's great and he's a boy, which is fun for your husbands. And Heidi was just saying, she has a kiddo that is a guy, so that was kind of nice. So anyways, very excited to have him. But today we are going to tackle a really important topic. And that topic, my friends, is fear. Fear is such a powerful emotion because it changes everything in an instant when that idea comes into your head. And when that idea of fear like enters your head, it's not just in your head, it's in your body. And it is such a controlling thing. And it can be a good thing because fear has sometimes given me courage. Or it can do the opposite and cause me to lose my nerve, And the interesting thing about fear is that it's such an easy thing to use. It's such an easy way to manipulate someone into doing something that, you want them to do. I mean, we've all done it. I mean, I know as mothers, like I've done it before to my kids. Like, what did my mom say to me? I would like walk around cross-eyed. She'd be like, "Your face can freeze that way." You know what I mean? Like, oh, okay, I'm not gonna do that anymore. Which is probably true if you like exercise those muscles too much. Like, maybe that can happen. I don't know. Who knows? But we've used that fear. So let's talk about like the good side of fear. Fear can be a warning. When I was barely 18, like. I'd been 18 for 3 months. You see, I spent the end of my 17th year of my life in Africa doing volunteer work in Mozambique. And I was in Mozambique, it was colonized by the Portuguese. So they speak Portuguese. And I'm from Brazil and I speak Portuguese. So I was the main translator for our group at 17. And anyways, it was an amazing experience. But on the way home, when I booked my flights, I was like, oh my gosh, it's $50 because we have a layover in Germany at Frankfurt. And I was like, oh my gosh, it's $50 to go to London. And I grew up like poor immigrant. So I was like to all my, and my friends were better off. They were Americans. Therefore, they were better off. And so I told my friend, like, let's all spend a week in London on our way home from Africa because, like, I'll never make it back. And which is not true. I've been back more than once. But my friends were just like, yeah, no, we just want to go home after that. And so I was like, Mom, why don't we like find a friend of a friend that I can stay with and they can show me around London? Well, they did. And I did. Like, I said goodbye to my friends that had been to Africa with in Germany, took a flight to London, figured out how to get to this lady's house. I get to the lady's house and she's like, oh, so nice to have you. Here's the key to my flat. I'm a nanny and I'll be gone the rest of the week. Just lock up when you go to London. And I was like, crap. So I had to like spend the entire week by myself. And I mean, like, I was like, well, I think like we knew that at some point before I arrived. Like it wasn't a shock right when I got there, but my parents would be like, "Oh, you'll be fine." I'm like, "Oh my gosh, my parents, like, they really trusted me." I was a really, really good kid in high school, and I'm like, "You can trust too much," is kind of my takeaway. Well, I decided to go to Her Majesty's Theater and watch Les Mis, the Broadway play, and I had the best experience watching the Broadway play. London is not like Spain in Madrid. I have since been to both. I hadn't been at that point. Midnight in Madrid, Spain is like a party. Everybody's awake. Everybody's talking. Stores don't close till like 2 a.m. And like, like old people are sipping their wine outside their apartments at the cafe. Like it's London is not. London, they're in bed by 8 p.m. or something. They're just like that tight upper lip, that British personality is a thing. So I come out of the theater and I'm like part of the last group leaving the theater, the last crowd. And I remember like I have never seen people disappear so quickly in my entire. It was like a magician's trick out of a movie. They were just like, I walked outside, I was inside full of people. I walk outside, and it's like these cars swallowed them up, and everybody was gone. And literally, the lights of the theater behind me go out, and I'm suddenly standing alone in London in the dark, and there's fog. I'm just like, and guys, this is pre-cell phones, prior to cell phones. And I had already planned, like, that's okay. And I probably would have like used my parents' credit card. Actually, taxis couldn't pay for credit cards, but I had cash, and I would have spent a lot just for a cab, just like take me home. You know what I mean? But there was no cabs. There was nothing, just nothing. And so I was just like, it's okay, stay calm, you're gonna be fine. And I started walking to my bus, and I still remember my bus number, 2825. That's the bus that I take, and it takes me to what's her name stop, and it's fine. It's gonna be fine. I'm gonna be fine. So I start walking to my bus stop, and I remember it was like 3 blocks forward, 1 block left. And again, this is pre-cell phone, so I'm really like, I'd spent 3 days in London, and I'd memorize like things, you know, and how to get there, my maps and stuff. I start walking, and I hear someone. This is like straight out of a horror movie. A man starts following me. And yes. And I was just like, and I remember I like turned around, and I was just like, oh, Lord Jesus. Like, and I'm just like praying my heart out. And he is staying the same distance behind me. And the only places that are open are like prostitute places, or like I was just like, I'd walk down the street during the day, and these seemed like legitimate businesses, but like the only few places that are on are like seedy. And I'm like desperately looking into shop the two or three shops that are open, and I'm like, I think it's worse to go in there. Like, so I just kept walking. I get to my bus stop, and I'm like, this is where Jack the Ripper rapes people. I cannot stay here and let this man catch up to me and wait for my bus. So then I remembered, oh, there's a bus stop in front of the Big Ben, like the Big Ben, you know. And I was like, if I go to that one that's better lit, maybe. And I just had this very strong feeling, go to that bus stop. And I'm like, okay, I think that's like four more blocks and then two left. Or is it one left? Like, I was just like, oh, but I'm like, and by now I'm like, I ran track and cross country in high school, and I was like, I could outrun this dude. But I'm wearing like my pretty shoes that I packed in Africa to wear in London, because I didn't want to look like an American wearing sneakers. So I was just like, and I'm like, and I had this clear and undeniable thought, if you run, this will escalate. Do not run. And I was just like, it was everything that I could to not break out into a sprint. And I know I don't know if I could have outrun him, but I was very healthy, and I thought I could. I couldn't today. Today I'd be like, keep walking. There'd be no thought to like run. I'd be like, and please don't kill me. So I get to the stop in front of the Big Ben, and I'm seeing it in the distance, and I'm like, please let me get there before my bus gets there. And there's this young man leaning on the post for the bus stop. And I was like, oh, hallelujah. Like, this is the only normal person I have seen in 10 blocks of London, you know? And I come in and I sit down, and he looks up at me and he smiles. And then creepy man sits down on the bench next to me, and he leans on his knees, and he is just looking at me and giving me the nastiest, ugly, horrible feeling. And he's just sitting there staring. And this young man at the lamppost or whatever he was leaning on, he stops and he turns to him. And then he looks again at me, and he's put it together. This woman is being pursued. Like, I can see as clear as day. My bus comes, and this young man says, why don't you get on first? I get on. And then this young man, I mean, he couldn't have been older than 20, turns around. He says, "You got to wait for the next bus, dude. You're not coming on this bus." Oh, God bless toxic masculinity, right? I was like, praise the Lord. And then to make it even better, because I'm 18 and I'm an idiot, he sits down and he answers his phone and he's speaking in Portuguese. And I'm like, we're gonna get married. So I sit next to him and I chat with him. And he gets off later and we never talk again. But he was so cute and he was my hero. And like till this day, I feel like he saved my life. Okay. So in that situation, fear was a very, very healthy thing. It was a warning to me that helped me get out of that situation and to be totally aware that I was not in a good situation, right? Fear can be a very healthy thing. But I find that when we're in a situation where we have fear, we have this tendency of wanting to let the fear run like a wild horse and it escalates. And I had that clear and undeniable feeling that I needed to keep it together, keep it together. If not, it was going to escalate. And so I've heard that statement before, like bridle your passions. And that means to put like a horse bridle on them and to hold it back. And that is what we have to train ourselves to do when it comes to fear. So, health issues, however, are a different kind of fear. The fear that I felt that night was just very much like my life is in danger from someone attacking me. But health issues, it's a little bit different because everything is kind of in your control. Sort of, as far as seeking outside medical attention, staying home, you know what I mean? All of that, though, that decision, it's like, do I go to the hospital? Do I not go to the hospital? It's kind of in your control. So that's a different kind of fear. That's the fear of like, what if I do something wrong? What if I don't know how to handle this, right? That's a very different kind of fear. So my family, my initial homeopathy journey was pretty intense. I've told you guys the story of my some, many of you, not all of you, I've told you some, many of you my strep throat story. And but after that initial beginning, which I'm not going to tell it today, but I will again in the future. After that initial like baptism by fire, so to speak, into homeopathy, we kind of all settled and were pretty healthy. And then I didn't have a very intense health crisis until like 2021 when we moved back from Budapest and we were here in Texas. And it was such a good reminder for what complete and abject fear does to me. And so it was like a good refresher. I'm like, oh, that was helpful for this session. So, but before I tell you guys a little bit about that, and actually, right now, in my texting group, like if you guys are on my texting list, I sent out a text on Sunday sharing part one of the story I'm going to be talking a little bit about today. But you guys are going to be getting like the real nitty gritty of it, so you guys get the inside version in the inside circle. Get it? See what I did there? So, but before I go into that, so my son got this horrible rash, and that's what we're going to be talking about in a little bit. But before I go into that, I want to point out about how fear can control us. Remember when COVID hit? I kind of like waited and to see like how are the homeopaths going to handle this? And you guys remember, people were pretty terrified. Do you remember Nurse Erin that came out and kind of broke a story about what was happening in the hospitals in New York? If you haven't, most of you guys are nodding, but just in case you haven't, I'll just refresh your memory. It was a woman that was a traveling nurse that worked for a company that moved their nurses different places. And she was placed in New York where they were having like, oh my gosh, my brother's friend ran an am worked for an ambulance company. They didn't have enough places to put the bodies of so many people dying so quickly. And she said, the thing is, people are coming into this hospital and they're fine. They're walking, they're talking, they're fine, but they're so scared. But when they come in and they check them in, the hospital immediately put them on ventilators. And even if they, because that was just the protocol for COVID, they immediately put them on ventilators. And the problem with being put on a ventilator is you get on a ventilator and it starts blowing out your lungs, and your lungs slowly stop functioning, and that kills them. And she was saying, we are killing people. The treatment they're getting is not necessary for what they have. And we are killing people. We're causing these death rates because of the protocol that the hospital makes money on doing, right? These breathing machines. And I stopped, we watched that as a whole family at home because we're all pandemic lockdown, you know, like in Hungary, I just did everything they told me to do because I did not want to rot in a Hungarian prison. So like I stayed home, I wore the mask or whatever. But my kids, I said to them, what did those people die of in the hospital? First thing they said was what? COVID. And I said, did they? And they were like, oh, mom's teaching me something. So they all got real quiet. And my oldest son said, fear. And I was like, that's what killed them. Because they didn't have any other alternative. They didn't trust their bodies. They didn't have any other medicine. They didn't have everything we're going to talk to now. And that fear drove them out of the home and into the hospital because they were scared. And ultimately, the treatment they got, yes, did kill them. But it was fear. They're the ones that checked themselves and no one grabbed them and put them in the hospital. They voluntarily went in there, right? And so we see how fear can be a very healthy thing or it can be a very damaging thing. And it's all about us gaining control of our fears. Okay, so today I'm going to share a story and then we're going to break down three or four different ways of how we can gain control of our fear. Actually, four or five. So my son had ran through the backyard with his friends and jumped. We had at the time at our old property that we sold because we're moving to Idaho. He had jumped into the creek for a second and got splashy or whatever. And oh, that's such a good connection, Joanna. She's saying this makes me so sad. Reminds me of when of that verse that says that people in the last days will lose their faith for fainting of fear. Interesting. That's very interesting. It's a good one. So he had ran through and then suddenly like he had these hard bumps that appeared on his legs. And I have guys, if you're squeamish about looking at photos, like look away, just like maybe minimize and just listen to the sound of my voice. But he it start it was kind of weird. I'm going to show you a quick picture of it. And it was just like these hard little bumps. Hang on, I don't want you guys to see all of it yet. It was these hard little bumps that appeared, and hang on a second, I have to stop this and make it work. It was these hard little bumps that appeared that just looked weird. And here it is. See those little bumps? That's like by his ankle. They were just hard little bumps. Weird. And he's a picker like I am, you know, pimple popper. And he like popped one. And it started to like spread and get worse. And so it just turned into at first like this little oozy we like honey colored weeping thing that was just about this big, like pretty small. And then it slowly grew and it spread and it grew and it spread to the other leg. So here's the progression. Okay, this is where if you're squeamish, avert your eyes immediately because it's gonna be the nastiest things you've ever seen in your life. Okay, I'm not sugarcoating it. Okay, so like not too bad, right? Then it was like worse. And this is like in a matter of a week, okay? Then it starts spreading to the other leg, whatever the heck that was. And this is an interesting video. Look carefully. Do you see? Look at like it's hard to tell unless you're looking straight on my phone, but like it would blink bright red light. It was like a flashlight, like it was weird. And then it got worse. And then it got much worse. And then it got to the, I think this is spreading to the other leg. And then this is the other leg. Starts spreading. Okay, so like, not bueno. Ugly, ugly, ugly. And if you're in the South, you know that we have something delightful called the flesh-eating bacteria that is in our waters. And I was just immediately like, that's what he has. He has flesh-eating bacteria. And this is what my son is struggling with. Like I remember thinking of it pretty much right away. And I was so worried, you guys, that I felt it was all consuming. I felt physically weak. I couldn't think. I actually did a live on Facebook, like in the beginning of this, and I watched the recording. I'm like, oh, this poor woman. Like I couldn't, I had scheduled it, so I had to do it, but like I kept turning around and like I couldn't string my words together. Like it was terrible. And I had immediately had diarrhea, and all I could do was like I was working with my homeopath, and all I could do was sit there and watch episodes of The Office with my son, and we got through like many seasons together. You know, not the most appropriate show, but that's now you know the kind of parent that I am. You're watching The Office. We would skip an episode here and there, but yeah, it was I couldn't sleep well. I wouldn't couldn't eat, and I was stressed. My mind was going through the possible worst scenarios. This is called, I call this being in the vortex of fear, where you're just like pretty much like the I had a ringing in my ears, and I was worried about, okay, like what if this is the most worst thing ever, which would be like the flesh-eating bacteria, and then what if or what if and then what if I don't do anything about it and then it gets worse. Or on the other hand, what if it's something like serious and I'm not taking him in to get antibiotics or get it looked at soon enough? Like, what if I'm going to look back and say I should have done something sooner and then regret that that decision, basically me, is what ends up harming my child, right? That's a that's like that's being in the vortex right there. And it's heavy and it's stressful. And when you're in the vortex, like you have to find your way out. And that's what we're going to talk to, what we're going to talk about today. But let me show you a few more of these terrible pictures because they're just so bad. So like it spread to the other leg. Look at how like this leg is so dark. It's in the shadows a little bit. It's so dark. Bright red. And then I have to show you, like, hang on, look at this. Like, oh, like so stressful, so stressful. Okay. So, I thought this is what I feel like with my daughter's seizures. It's been almost 5 years now. Oh, that is so hard, Fitzy. That's so hard. Yes, I was losing my mind. Yes, I'm glad you guys are validating me because thank you. It was awful. It was very awful. So there's a few things we have to do. Number one, fear causing problem number one is being in the dark about what's actually going on and allowing ourselves to be in the dark. Have you guys ever heard of that game, Two Truths and a Lie? This is what happens when you're in this situation. So like two truths and a lie is like, okay, I was born in Brazil. I was 3 years old when we immigrated to the USA, and my parents didn't speak a word of English when they came. Okay, which one's the lie? Oh, it's the my parents. Good question, Heidi. Did the rash hurt or itch? I'll talk about it in a second. My parents did speak a little bit of English. They took a couple English classes before they came. Or like another one I wrote down was like, I played piano since I was six. I play the piano very well today, and my favorite composer is Beethoven. The second one is a lie. I wish I played the piano better. I don't play super great, but you know, give me a week and I can play the hymns at church. That's about the best I can do. So big pharma and conventional, you know, the conventional world that we live in, they use that trick, two truths and a lie, at least two truths and a lie. And it's harder when they sometimes stack a lot of truths to get to the lie. So when I had a strep throat or when someone has strep throat, they might say it can be serious, true. It can cause rheumatic fever or scarlet fever. True. You have to take antibiotics. No. You might have to take antibiotics, but there's the lie, right? Or here's another one with my son. He has a horrible rash. True. It's spreading fast. True. It could be serious. True. It looks nasty. True. It could be flesh-eating bacteria. True, he's going to die. Lie. Or he might die. It might be really bad, but we don't know, right? And he needs antibiotics. Also, that's an absolute statement. He needs antibiotics. That's also not necessarily true. A lot of times, ultimately what I needed in this situation, how do I separate the truth from the lie? You got to go get more information. That means you need a good doctor that you can go to, someone in person. I was working very closely with my homeopath and she was amazing, but I needed someone on base in America to look at this. And so we do. We have a really great doctor that we go to. I've suggested this before. One of the best ways to find a good doctor, and like if you have, a summer home or something, like you need a doctor in both locations. Because what ends up happening is you need the kind of doctor that will not report you to CPS when you walk in with your kid and their rash has spread all over, and they're like, "Why didn't you take him in sooner?" Like that was a big fear of mine. And so we go to a really cool doctor who doesn't even accept insurance. He's just a family doctor, but he will not accept insurance because he feels like it ties him down to making decisions he doesn't think he wants to make. So he's really cool, but you spend $100, but whatever, it's fine. I'd rather spend, but we never go to him. He's like, last time you when we took Mateus in, he's like, last time you came in, you were six. I'm like, oh, has it been that long? So we don't go that often. But a good way to find doctors is to look around for a doctor who does not require any kind of pokes. That's going to be probably a good doctor. And I think chiropractors are good. My hesitancy with having just a chiropractor is, do they see skin conditions? Like, do they see all of these other things that maybe a family doctor would? So if he does, great. But if he doesn't, it's kind of tricky, right? And another thing is for like a GYN or an OBGYN, I would say look for ask a midwife who they go to if they need a doctor to come in and help during an emergency or whatever. That's going to be a good doctor, a good GYN to work with, because if they work well with midwives, they play nice, they might play nice with you, right? So those are a couple of tips that I've found. But have a doctor. And what I thought was so interesting is they said, first of all, I did not plant the idea of flesh-eating bacteria. Be very careful when you go in. If you give this information to them, now you've planted this idea in them, and maybe they're going to start going down the wrong route, right? So I think it's important to keep your mouth shut when you go there and let them react from a clean slate. Don't influence them with your fear, right? Because fear can spread so easily. And I love this comment. Dr. Greenbaum has a list of doctors for medical freedom all over the US. That's amazing. I did know about that, but I always forget. And then Monica's saying that she does have a chiropractor, but they also have a family doctor for urgent care situations. Blood work, exactly. And you just pay cash. Perfect. And just for the record, doctors are not really good at identifying skin problems. Dermatologists, if you want to know exactly what it is, you really should go to a dermatologist, but those guys are so hard to get into. So it's like, whatever. But just keep that in mind. That's just a challenge of a family doctor too. What they did that I thought was really interesting though is they pushed on his skin. She put on her gloves and she pressed on it. And I was like, oh. And she was like, does this hurt? And he was like, not at all. And then she firmly like squeezed it. She's like, does this hurt? And he's like, not at all. And she's like, okay, this is not serious. I thought that was so helpful. I realized, okay, if he was feeling pain with like she was pressing firmly, she's like, this is not serious. It's ugly as sin, but it is not serious because she is because there's not an infection. An infection would be very painful. And because I was pretty sure it was impetigo. And I was like, I think it started off like, because we see a lot of impetigo in the South, humid, warm, woo, let's breed illness, But she was like, no, it started as impetigo probably. She's like, but I don't know what this is. This does not look like impetigo. And impetigo is usually staph or strep, and the flesh-eating bacteria is strep. I know all the things now. And I was like, well, can we culture it? Can we culture it and see what it is? And she was just like, I think we just, his body's not working it out. Let's get him some antibiotics. And this is where like I whoop, Okay, cool. Sounds good. Call it in. Don't call CPS. So I just like let them call it in, because I'm not going to her for homeopathic advice. I'm not going to her for holistic advice. I'm going to her as a doctor for her advice. She's told me it's not serious, and call it in. Do what you know, and I'm not going to fight you on it. And we actually later found out this was poison ivy, and I have like no experience with it. Yes, we later found out, and I'll tell you how we found out a year later. But when he was in the office, she was like, "Okay, we'll go get your," she was like, "Go," like he was leaving. When we were leaving, she saw him limping, and she was like, "Wait, whoa, stop! Why are you limping? Does it hurt?" He's like, "No, it doesn't hurt. It's just that parts of my scab will dry up, and if I walk like normal, it'll crack the scab and spread." And so she was like, oh, okay, so you're not limping because it's painful. He's like, no. She's like, okay, then that's fine. She's like, I'm really not worried about this. And let me just read this comment because I think it's interesting. Same with pain. Doctors are not concerned about identifying pain or identifying the cause, but rather peddling the pain meds. Yeah, exactly. That's what your husband's poison ivy looks like. Oh, interesting. Good job, Mandy. Way to figure it out. Suddenly, I was just like feeling so much better. And I learned something. I learned about pressing on the skin. And if it doesn't hurt, we're not so concerned. And then the other thing that I had, I was able to go back to my homeopath and say, look, they don't think it's the flesh-eating bacteria. So woohoo! I was so relieved, y'all. I was so relieved. And just getting that information was really helpful. Now, keep in mind one thing, just so you guys know, like we did hatch a story when we went to my doctor. I hope you guys think I'm a good person. I don't like to fib or lie. I really don't. But I totally will if I have to in a medical situation. Okay, I totally will. So I told my son, because what I was worried about is we were going to get there and she'd be like, like some people are judgmental, especially doctors. How long have you had this? Why didn't you bring him in sooner? This is neglect. Like nowadays, you know what I mean? It's such a thing. So we were driving there and I'm like, listen. And he's like, okay. And thankfully I have like, I like to joke that like, anyways, my kids are, they're quick. They're clever and they can keep up, right? And I was just like, you were camping with your friends. You didn't tell anyone about the rash. You came home the day before yesterday. We watched it for one day and we're going in today. Okay. So this started a week ago. Yes. But I was not present and you didn't tell anyone because you were on a camping trip with the youth. Okay. He's like, got it. Because so when we got there, he was just like, yeah, I was on a camping trip and something happened. I like, so he told, I ran through the forest, hopped in a stream and it was just kind of spreading. And I didn't tell anyone because I was embarrassed. And I came home, my mom watched it just for one day and she took me right away. And I'm like, that's the right answer. I don't know. It just scares me. I know I have a really good doctor. I really do. And I don't think, having been there, but I hadn't been there since my son was six. I'm like, what if something changed? What if they're like, there's someone, and who knows? You know what I mean? So it's just been a while, but it was a great office. And she wasn't even worried about that, about how long it took me to take him in or whatever. Yes, thank you. I am a good mom. I'm looking at the big picture and protecting my child. Thank you. Okay, so I don't think lying is necessarily a great thing to do, but thus is the world, and or thus they have made the world, right? So we have to be careful as moms. So then I go to my homeopath, and I was just like, and my homeopath is Camilla Scher. She's a wonderful, wonderful homeopath. She's very busy. She lives in Tanzania. Her work there is nonstop. She's always going to different villages and different things, and she's dealing with like life and death all the time. She's not the fluffiest homeopath in the sense of like spending a long time making me feel better. Like she's just like, and she's usually not available for acutes. She's more of like chronic, because an acute you need someone at, So that's the good thing to talk to your homeopath about, is what is your policy on acutes? What if I'm facing something? How do I get a hold of you? How can I reach you? Right. Camilla wouldn't be necessarily the best for that kind of a situation. That's where you might lean on homeopathy 24/7 or something like that. And that's what I do, is but at this point, like I can do most of my acutes myself, so it's fine. So that's why it's not a big deal for me. But for this one, I was like, help, Camilla. And she was messaging me a bit, and she made me feel so much better. I'm looking to see if there's other our children here. Okay. I'm not gonna say exactly what she said, but she's hilarious. I was just like, Camilla, I am so stressed about this. And she did a voice memo for me and she's like, why are you stressed? And at the time we thought it was impetigo. And she's like, Paula, impetigo is not serious. Look, it will spread, it will spread, it will spread, and then it will stop. But it's not serious. It's just SHIT. That's all. Just that word again. I was just like, oh. And she was like, what can I say? It's just blah. And I was like, I don't know. It made me feel so much better to hear her say it so casually like that. And then my son was like, what did Camilla say? And I'm like, well, I'll let you hear it for yourself. I played it for him. And we both looked at each other and we were just like, okay, like the doctor's fine. Camilla, what I like about Camilla, she sees the worst of the worst in Africa, right? She's seeing malnutrition people and illnesses we don't see here normally. So like she sees some stuff. And it just gave me so much comfort that they were both like, it's fine. One doctor was like, his body's not working it out, so get the antibiotics. But she wasn't like, he needs antibiotics right now. And she's not the kind of doctor. It's doctor, and then she's the nurse. What's the word when they can prescribe the nurse? No, not nurse anesthetist, nurse practitioner. And so like they're not that type of practice, which is a big deal. Finding the right practice. Are they the kind that you immediately over things that like even all of us would agree is not that big of a deal? You know what I mean? So it's good to have like not a freaking out doctor. And I think it's interesting, like I think his practice, because people are all cash pay, I think he tends to see illnesses at a little bit more advanced stages than your run-of-the-mill pediatrician, where moms are bringing their kids in for anything. Like I really think the kind of practice they have influences how they react and see things. 'Cause she was just like, oh, okay, yeah, it's not, I mean, it's ugly. Do you know what I mean? I think that's a big deal. So really finding a good doctor in the right office is a big deal. And so again, for Camilla, like I was just like, they're not freaking out about this. And my son Mateus was like, yeah, I guess not. And we were like, okay. All right, fear-inducing problem number two. You guys, I'm gonna tell you right now, we're gonna go a little bit over. I'm sorry. Very sorry. I know we're supposed to keep these to an hour. Fear-inducing problem number two is other people's opinion. And I'm talking about the outside world. So my son missed a lot of youth night. I think this lasted for beginning to end 3 weeks, maybe a month. Like I should have kept better track. And there was a lot of prying eyes from church and our homeschool families. Our homeschool family is not that hard to deal with because they're weird already. But church is like pretty, we get mostly mainstream type people. And there was a lot of outside. And then there was this little girl at church who's living with her grandma. Anyway, they were needing a like foster care type thing, and so they were wondering if she could stay at our, we're not registered as foster care, but until they got the foster care thing figured out, they were hoping families could get certified. But then I had a daughter, so like she's allowed to stay at your house for a week, like as a sleepover. And I was like, crap, she really shouldn't come over because my son has this thing going on, and they think it's like impetigo, which could be like staph or strep, and her grandma's already not doing well. I don't want her to bring this home to her grandma. You know what I mean? Like, so I kind of had to be a little bit more honest about what was going on. And so again, the prying eyes, and I have found that it makes it heavier. I was on a flight. Oh my gosh, flights. I do not talk to people on flights. Like, I have found that you are my people, and I can talk to you guys. But that's about it. Like, I can't do it anymore with like the common human. And every time I'm on a flight, like, so what do you do? I'm like, oh, I'm a writer. Like I've decided, but then I need to find another answer because, oh, what do you write? I'm like, ah, see, I asked for that one, didn't I? And so, I was on this flight with her and I was like, well, I write homeschooling curriculum, like, science type stuff. Oh, what kind of science? I'm like, holistic health science. Oh, holistic. So what kind of things do you teach? And I'm like, we teach about like I was like fevers are good. I'm trying to pick like the easiest, like not stressfulest thing to bring up. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And she was just like, immediately, she's like, and this is like my last flight that I took. So it was not that long ago. She immediately told me a story of a woman that she knew from her church that had given birth at the hospital. And then she came home and she developed a fever and died. And I'm like, oh, well. And so I was just like, so what do you do? My answer to her. I was just like, let's stop talking about this because I do not want to explain this anymore. I mean, it's very sad. I'm sure that happened to this poor young woman, but like, there's a lot that went wrong there for that to happen. She did not have support, you know, at home. She didn't, I'm sure the hospital told her, unless she went to like a, unless she just went to a hospital that was just overwhelmed, like a county hospital that's overwhelmed and they're not really explaining things to these young mothers, you know. I also find that as far as the outside world goes, like misery, it's so true. Misery loves company. Like when very conventional people meet someone like you or me who's doing something different than they're doing, it makes them very uncomfortable because suddenly they're like, am I doing it wrong? But the reason they're not doing it the natural way is because there's an arrogance in them that is not allowing them to look beyond the mark. Like I have a sister-in-law whose sister, so like the sister-in-law's sister, who is very arrogant about women who don't vaccinate their kids and stuff. And I'm just like, stop talking about it. Like, if you feel so good about what you're doing, then why do you keep talking about it? Like, clearly you're deep down, it's a symptom. It's a symptom that she's uncomfortable, but she's too arrogant to find out why. And that's why she's kind of mule, you know, feet stuck in. And so they feel it annoys them. It's like the light annoys the darkness. Not that she's a dark person, but when you know truth, that's a form of light. And when you're not looking at the truth and you're shielding yourself, like it's irritating. And so they do, they really do love company. And so imagine like a sick person who's in a dark room. And then you open the window to let the sunlight in, and it makes them feel sicker because they're not ready for it. It actually reminds me of that little witch in that Disney movie, The Sword in the Stone. Remember how Merlin and the little witch have this like fight, and she becomes a dragon, and he becomes a little bacteria, and he makes her sick with like the measles. And they put her in bed, and he's like, you have the measles, and the best thing for the measles is lots and lots of sunlight. And he like breaks open her roof, and she's like, oh, I hate the sunlight. You know, that's what it's like for these people. It's we exude that light and doing something differently, and it makes them uncomfortable and upsetting. And it's universal. When someone is wallowing in the darkness, it annoys them, even if it's a subconscious irritation to see you walking in the light. And I truly believe that that. This it was she was an older woman at the airport at on the flight. I immediately irritated her by my views, and she did not care to find out why. To her, what I was doing was blasphemy to say that fevers are good. But rather than asking, like, why would you teach this very strange belief? Like, rather than seeking to learn more, she just treated that information in the same way some treat antibiotics or the information about disease. She wanted to suppress it. And how did she suppress it? Fear. Remember the story she told me? There was a girl, she had a baby, and then she died. What was she trying to make me feel? Fear over something. Right? And yeah, I mean, we can all relate to this. Lisa's saying sounds like something one of my aunts would say. Like, yeah, we can all relate to this. So the antidote to number two is to shield yourself from prying eyes, shut it down. Don't give details. Do not open up. Open up to the right person so that when the wrong person comes knocking to check in on you, you're not going to word vomit onto the wrong person and then regret it later. Because when you're in that vulnerable state, you do need someone to turn to. This is why we have this membership. Like guys, I want you guys to feel comfortable. Can someone call me? I'm super stressed. I just need a mommy path to call me. If anyone's willing, send me a direct message. Like you can post that in our group because you really need to be able to open up to the right person so that you don't accidentally word vomit to the next person that comes who may not be the right person, right? Ask me how I know. Because we've all been there. I've been there for sure. So and even for a long time with my own personal family's health stuff, like the flu or anything, I keep that so private until after it's over, and then I share it with everyone else because I just don't need everybody to say homeopathy doesn't work or whatever, you know. And okay, so fear-inducing problem number three is kind of like number two, but it's a little bit different. It's when people in the home are freaking out, your husband or the patient, my son, Mateus, right? And so there's a couple of antidotes to that. Actually, my husband is kind of tends to be the calmer person. I remember once I was wearing my son in a baby sling, and like dumb first time mom, y'all. I babysat a lot of babies, but it was sheerly mercenary. I just wanted the money. And so, like, and I would clean the house, I'd do the dishes, I'd mop the floors, and I'd get a tip. You know what I mean? And so, like, I was like an amazing babysitter, but I didn't enjoy the children. And so, when I got older and had my own kids, I actually fell in love with babies, thankfully. Whew, I was worried about it. But I didn't know too much about them because I just kind of did what needed to be done. So I had my son in this baby sling, and I'm like an idiot standing on a chair with a knife, pulling out a staple from the wall that was stuck in the wall. And sure enough, like for the first time ever, he like sat up out of the baby sling and started falling out of it head first. I have a knife in my hand, and I had to like slap him like a basketball with a knife in my hand. And no, I did not stab him, but like I could have, and I almost did, kind of, sort of. And so when I got home, when my husband got home, it had been like maybe 10 minutes, and I was sit he was my son was crying, and I was crying on the couch. The knife was on the floor, and my husband's like, "What happened?" You know. And anyways, and I was just like, "Well, I like," and my husband's the oldest of 10, and I was like, and I told him what happened. I had to hit him really hard to catch him. My husband's like, he took the baby, and he's like, he's the oldest of 10, oldest of 10. He's like, "Paula, I have seen so many babies fall on their head. Their heads are like rubber. They're fine. What's for dinner?" And I was like, "That made me feel so much better. Thank you so much, your poor sisters." He's got eight sisters and one brother. And so I just thought that was really sweet. But I know that not everybody has that husband or those kids that are calm. And the antidote to that is three things: knowledge, connection, and humor. Okay, knowledge. You have to be doing my Teach Me Health and Homeopathy program with your family. Even if you just read the storybook, read it in front of your husband if he's skeptical. Or hopefully there are people listening right now as I am speaking into your home in the background. Turn up the volume, y'all. But like, let them hear these things. Like, just let them be exposed to it gently, not like directly, because this is for you, but let them hear these things, right? And you know, so expose them to that information. But I really think for kids, especially if they're still in your home and they're young, doing the Teach Me Health and Homeopathy curriculum, and that's totally not a plug. I wrote it because I genuinely think it's so good. But connection to me is, it's like if I hadn't been teaching my kids this information, my son and I wouldn't have been ready for what we faced. What happened was, on the way home, my son was like, "All right, so the doctor prescribed these antibiotics," and he was miserable. Like, I think by now we're like a week and a half in, and we just were like, "Okay, so we're facing antibiotics." And my son was like, "Okay, so what do we do here?" She's like, "Well, she thinks it's impetigo's to staph or strep, and she thinks it's staph, and staph loves to come back, but worse. That's why we have MRSA. MRSA is, you know, antibiotic resistant staph. And so, like, if we suppress this with antibiotics, it's going to come back, and it's going to come back again and again." And my son was like, "What?" And he already knew this, but like, I was just telling him specifically, this is what we've talked about, and here it is. It's arrived, right? My son was like, "Okay, so you're saying to me that I can do the antibiotics and it'll just come back, but worse?" I'm like, "Yeah, you know, so and so from your basketball team, he does an antibiotic every year because he gets impetigo. It comes back." And he was just like, "No, don't even stop to pick it up." Because I was like, I kind of had this feeling like, I'm going to ask him, And I don't always give my kids the option, you know, but this is a 15-year-old boy, you know. I'm just like, I felt like I needed to give him this choice. And I felt like he was ready for the choice. Does that make sense? There's a little, you know, and he was just like, no, don't even stop at the pharmacy. Just keep going. Let's just do this the right way so I don't have to deal with it again. And I did say, or if it comes back, it will be more mild. This is the first time. This is not a chronic thing for him. So this is not like, you know, if it was chronic, it might take some a few more rounds before it was fully cleared, right? So I thought that was really good. That knowledge really grounded us. And there was this like beautiful moment where my son was sitting there. He was itching so bad and he was so frustrated. Every day it was worse, and he was really low in spirit. And he was just like, I'm like, how are you doing? I could tell he was depressed. He's like, fine. And I like crouched down and I put my hand on his shoulders. And I was just like, Mateus, nothing lasts forever. For better or worse, nothing lasts forever. One day you will look on this, back on this, and it will be a memory and it will be past. This will not last forever. And he was just like, okay, Mike, does that make you feel better? It's like, yeah, it actually really does to be reminded of that, you know? I mean, nothing lasts forever. Life, we're all gonna die someday. You know what I mean? Like, there is an end to all things at some point, and then new things begin. And so I remember that, like, I thought I was close with my kids. This experience with Mateus, like, drew us closer. And then the last antidote to dealing with family that's freaking out. So knowledge, connection, humor. Okay. So at night, I would put on calendula cream because I don't want to do the secondary infection from these open things. So I would put calendula cream on him. And then one night I was like, I wonder if we should do like coconut oil because it kept drying up. And then he couldn't bend his legs because it would like crack if he, because the skin was dry. And we were worried that that would be a problem. Like, what if I put coconut oil, but I don't want it to sting? So I had like gloves. I like got coconut oil and I put it on his legs. And he immediately went, ah! Like it was stinging him. And I was just like, oh. And he like, just kidding. And it was like 1 in the morning. My husband was sleeping on the floor next to us, like per usual. Like, thanks a lot, dear. Like, moral support as he sleeps on the. I just love men. They can really detach and just be fine, right? But Mateus and I, like, we had carried so much stress and intensity for so many days that little joke that he did, and it comes straight from me. I tend to joke sometimes at the most inappropriate times, but I usually find the right way to do it, and it's usually hilarious, I think. Well, at least I think I'm hilarious. Like, I have a running joke in my family that I'm always laughing at my own jokes. Sometimes I can't even finish the joke because I think I'm so funny, and then I'm laughing at myself, you know. But so that totally came from him. But I've taught my family to learn a little bit of humor during like these stressful moments, and it was the best medicine. And we laughed. My husband wakes up and he's like, why are you two laughing so hard? And we're like, we can't talk about it. Like, we just couldn't even explain because we were just laughing so hard. And it was this really wonderful thing. And so the antidote, I feel, to the people at home freaking out is knowledge, connection, and humor. And by knowledge, I mean perspective, knowledge with perspective, right? Okay. Fear-inducing problem number four, not having the correct remedy on hand. This is something you guys told me in our discussion board. And a lot of that comes with like not being prepared. You have to be, and so the antidote does, you gotta be prepared. You need to own remedies. You need to invest money, set money aside in ordering your remedies. Have a homeopath, have a plan, have a homeopath. If your homeopath does not help you with acutes or they're out of town or something, you can go to homeopathy 24/7 or another homeopath. You know, I know people that I have two homeopaths. One's my main homeopath, one's my backup homeopath because she's really available for acutes, but I feel like this other homeopath gets my chronic. And so I have a plan and have it worked out and own your remedies. Okay. And then, oh, here's another kind of little part of my plan that I've learned is don't set yourself unachievable deadlines. Don't say, if he's not better by tomorrow, we're going to go to the doctors and do antibiotics. What I always recommend as part of your plan is to say, let's reassess tomorrow morning. How long do I need to hold my breath and then I'm going to reassess. And that's kind of what I had to do with my son's rash. Because if I had said, if we're not better by tomorrow, we're going to just do the antibiotics. That doesn't mean it's time for antibiotics. And that doesn't mean, just because you set this arbitrary deadline, you should say, I'm going to let this go until tomorrow because I think he's going to be fine until tomorrow. And then we're going to reassess. So I really think that's a really important, thing to do as far as timeline goes when you're in a time sensitive thing. Is don't say, I'm going to do antibiotics. Say, I'm going to reassess. Okay. So have a plan, remedies, homeopath, doctor. We've kind of touched on that. And then, don't do a lot of if-then statements that are absolute because now you're committing to an if-then. You're not really deciding in that next moment what's right and what's wrong. Okay. The last one, this is one that's going to make me cry. Oh, I just want to show you guys real quick. In the end, my son's rash started to dry up. And so, like the oldest parts of the rash healed first. And this is what I think is so interesting about doctors is like they really have never seen the natural cure of think about it. How many doctors today know what a natural cure for what is this? Poison ivy. How many of them know? They don't. They don't know what it looks like. It's very confusing to them. So, this is where it started to dry up and get better. I think this picture is out of, I think these are the last bumps to come up and they never like turn into the end. And then look at that. Slowly got better. And what was really interesting is this rash did come back exactly 1 year later to the week. And he had not been running through the forest or anything. And so we were both like, crap, it's back. He's like, you said it wouldn't come back. Mike said it wouldn't come back as bad if we didn't suppress it. And it sure enough, like these bumps right here came back exactly 1 year later. I would say the eruptions were 95% better. So poison ivy soaks into the skin and your body is pushing it out. And I think what happened was it didn't fully finish pushing it out. So a year later, the body's like, okay, it's time. Finish pushing it out and it's not a problem. And I promise you, next time my son gets exposed to poison ivy, his body's going to know what to do a little bit better. Right? So, okay. So now what if the question is, what if you're in a situation where homeopathy doesn't work? Or what if the thing you're actually fearing happens? What if the real fear of things that have happened in the past will happen again? Like, we have members here whose children have had cancer. What if that comes back? So what if like your worst fear actually is happening? You know what I mean? Like mine was flesh-eating bacteria at that time and it wasn't. But what if it was? You know what I mean? What if your worst fear? So I think the first thing you have to do is slow down. Slow down. I wasn't when I taught high school, I had a student that had a grand mal seizure, which I know, some of you were saying your kids deal with that. It was very stressful. And the first thing that I do in a when the worst is happening is I just slow down. Like slow down and be deliberate. But to me, when that happens, your training as a mommypath is really important because it teaches you how to think and problem solve, right? But then on the other hand, for me, it's my relationship with God. And I know that not all of us are necessarily like believers or Christians. So I don't know what other words to use. And so you just insert higher power or whatever it is for you, but I'm just going to use the words I'm comfortable with. So we had a horrible tragedy happen in my husband's side of the family. And I've gotten permission from all parties to share this with you. And I really don't want to depress you guys, but I really think it's a powerful story. And I'm going to tell you what happened. So several years ago, I'd say going on 6 years. There was a wedding, and my husband has eight sisters and one brother, and there was a wedding, and the day, and it was all at one of the sisters' house, and it was this wonderful wedding. And the day after the wedding, people were going home, and you know, like Jason had flown back to Texas, and there was still a lot of kids at the house or whatever, and they were just kind of, you know, unwinding from the events of the day before. And it was raining outside, and all the kids, basically, long story short, one uncle backed over one of the nieces, and she did die in the end. And it was just the saddest thing ever. Like horrible, horrible, horrible thing. And just so you guys know, like the way it happened was they parked their cars like just outside the porch. So it was my sister-in-law, my brother-in-law, and their daughter. They had to walk past, and they had like a 15 passenger van. And they had to walk past the back of the car. So it wasn't like anyone didn't check. Like you have to walk past the way it's parked. You have to walk past the back hood to get to the front door. And then they would back out and go. And there was nobody there. It was raining outside. All the kids were downstairs. And in this, the amount of time that it took them to pass the back, get in the car, and back out immediately, this little girl had come out of the house, down the steps, and was right behind the tire. It was just this horrible, horrible tragedy. And so I called, they're all my sisters-in-law because I'm married into the family. I called the mom of the daughter. So this was my husband's brother's child. And then it was his sister and husband that were in the car. So these are siblings, you know. And so this is the kind of thing where Donette was in the passenger seat. And I asked both of them, and they both essentially said the same thing. Today they live next door to each other. These two families do. Like the sibling that had the little girl that died actually bought a piece of property right next door, and they're like neighbors, and it's this beautiful, beautiful relationship that they have. I remember my entire, because Donette has many children. She's the one that has like 13 kids. And my entire time being married in the family, Donette has always been like, I'm so afraid that something horrible is going to happen to one of our kids, you know, and she was like, my greatest fear was that I would have a child that would like run, I would be involved somehow, like on my watch, my kid runs out and gets hit by a car. And she was like, so that was always my greatest fear, like swimming, or like she'd always be like, I don't like to go camping because some wild animal is going to take a kid at night. Like she's always like, you know, these fears, you know? And she was like, Paula, this was worse than my greatest fear. Because I used to be afraid that someone would be hurt, and I didn't know, and I didn't wasn't able to stop it. She was like, not only it was like to the next level because I was involved. It was partially my fault. I was in the car. Her husband was driving, but I was in the car. Like, this was worse than my greatest fear. And she just is like, so I just like wrote verbatim what she wrote to me. And I'm just going to read little snippets of what she said. And she even said, like, I'm so glad you called me and tell your moms, like, I'm so glad that you called me because it's therapeutic to kind of check where am I at with this, you know, and to talk about it for a minute to kind of recheck. But she just said, you know, God is aware of every was aware of every single person that day, of every single one of us. And he immediately brought us all a peace that we could not understand. And she's like, you're allowed to feel more than one things at once. And she's like, I didn't know that. She's like, your mind can't really think of a single thought, more than one thought at the same time, but your emotions can. You're allowed to feel panicked and horrible and terrible and angry. But I always felt peace as well in that moment where I was feeling multiple things at once, she said. And then I went through like a phase of like, oh my gosh, I can never let my kids go outside. We're gonna have to deadbolt the house and never let them outside ever again. Or for her and her husband, like they wanted to hate themselves so bad. She's like, we wanted to hate ourselves, but we couldn't do it. Like we couldn't feel any amount of hate to ourselves. We wanted to be so hard on ourselves and to hate myself, and especially her husband. Like he really wanted to hate himself. And she's like, but we literally couldn't because we chose to put God right there between myself and those thoughts, or himself and those thoughts. And she said, And when we really, really think about what happened, like if I sit down even today and I think about, like, it's so sad. And she's like, and there's times where like my faith wanders and it's harder. But most of the time, I choose to feel that love and that peace from God. And I feel it really solid and I feel peace. It's okay. And she's like, I don't think God caused this to happen, but for whatever reason, he didn't prevent it from happening either. And he could have. And she's like, and that goes with health things, right? God, I don't think he wants us to have cancer or to get sick or have these horrible things, but for some reason he doesn't prevent it, you know? And she's like, and I just always felt like it's okay. Whatever it is, even if it's the worst thing, it's okay. Like she's like, don't try and control it. You know, and she's like, I think the hardest thing is the longing that Brady and Alexis feel for their daughter. She's like, it's hard to feel that and see that they long for her. And she's like, but I just know that some way, somehow, God will make it up for them. You know, like their sorrows increased. And she's like, and I just think that means that their joy someday will increase as well. And they're going to look at that and they're going to be like, when we are with God again, they're going to look at that and say, like, oh, wow, we are okay. Like, we're all okay. And she says, I really believe in that. And she says, and she says, there's times where, like, if you can't trust yet, just keep trying. She says, just keep trying to trust because trying is also enough and it will be okay. And I think, she says, I think when I was at my worst is when I was trying to control everything, deadbolt the house, never let the kids go outside, you know, when she was trying to control everything. And she's just like, you can't, like, you can't control everything. You have to, at some point, let go and say it's going to be okay. And you have to let go. And I've talked about this before. Actually, I think it was from a comment that you had, Shannon. It's like, where my prayers when I was very, very sick was, okay, Lord, you're not taking this away from me yet, my chronic illness. And this is a hard prayer to say, but sometimes I would say it and it would be, until that day comes where I feel better, give me the strength to endure this then. And that's a hard prayer, but it was the right prayer at times for me to make. And so, whatever your belief system is, I do think that the opposite of fear is faith. You cast out fear by having faith and replacing it with faith, because we're not empty vessels, and we can't just walk around without fear. You have to put something else in its place. It could be love, but I really think the direct opposite is faith, having faith that it will be okay, and even if it's not okay, it will be okay. You know? And yeah, I do. I feel like she said, I feel like life is really hard, she said. But she said, I feel like my assurance is just knowing that I can have peace no matter what. And for me, that's through my faith and being a believer, you know? And I do, I don't care who you are or what your belief system is. Like, I don't care. We are all entitled to that still small voice that is inside all of us that can bring us peace. We are entitled to that. We were given that, you know, when we were born. And I feel like we are entitled to that. And so it's learning to listen to that for the little things. So then it really matters, you know how to listen to it, you know? Donette is a really special gal. I really like her. She's the sister just under my husband, and I've just always admired her. And I remember when this happened, I remember thinking, like, not like she was ready for this, because nobody's ready for this, you know what I mean? But she was ready for it. She'd been making good choices with herself and her family, listening to that voice. And that's why we need to work on that now. That's part of being prepared, so that when we need it, we know how to tap into that part of ourselves through, you know, for me, through God. So anyways, okay, so I only went 10 minutes over, but I did want to share that story with you guys about fear, because I feel like that illustrates kind of the worst, right? One of those unimaginable fears. And how it's become beautiful. I think my other sister-in-law Alexis struggles with it more. She had a much more, anyways, life is not easy for everyone. She does struggle with with fear, and she hasn't given up that control. But it's like every time I see her, because I don't see them all the time, and so like we were in Budapest or whatever, and I spent time with her this last time. I'm like, this is the best I've ever seen you, and she's like, thank you. I'm working so hard. I'm like, I know you are, and it's just. It's a process. So, anyways. Yes, thank you guys. You're very welcome. So that's it for today. And anyways, there you go. We'll see you guys in a week to see Noel. He's a really great homeopath. Him and Desiree are actually friends, and she said that she called Noel to like brief him on what this February was like, so he's prepared for March. I thought that was great. So, you're very welcome. You're very welcome, guys. I love you all, and I hope you have a good week and that you can ponder on, how to cast out fear from your heart and being prepared next time it happens. So, all right. See you all. Have a good night. Bye, everyone.